Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. The government in the Kurdish region of northern Iraq has taken some strong steps to ensure women's rights. They've supported a network of women's shelters and have been tough on domestic violence cases and honor killings. But there are also high rates of female genital mutilation, also called FGM, in Iraq's Kurdish region. A new report from Human Rights Watch finds that the government is not doing enough to combat this dangerous and debilitating practice. Today we'll speak with Samer Muscati. He's the Iraq researcher for Human Rights Watch.
The government itself, in a study in January 2009, concluded that in one district, more than 40% of women and girls had undergone a form of FGM. Some girls and women have their clitoris removed. Others have much more removed. And the practice is different from town to town, as well as from midwife to midwife. But generally, it's the removal of the clitoris and perhaps other areas of the genitals of women.
I lived in northern Iraq and worked there in 2005, 2006, and did a story about a campaign to eradicate the practice. It was about a mobile movie theater that this organization, Wadi, was using to reach out to rural villages. The villagers welcome a team from the German-funded group Wadi. They're here to show the movie. Women in jewel-colored caftans gather on the red Persian carpet. They're waiting for the show to begin. Nurse Hira Najib asked the men to leave. She explains that the movie is for women only.
We are going to talk about women's circumcision, and we want to eradicate this thing that has been common among us from our ancestors. Close the door so that the men don't hear us. I am not sure that this thing still exists among you, but I have heard it does.
But one of the women in the audience, Rana Rafat, says, "We want circumcision because it is part of Islamic law." Her mother and grandmother told her that the food cooked by an uncircumcised woman is unclean. Najib turns on the DVD player. She tells the women, "Watch the film and then you can decide." The film begins with scenes from dusty villages like this one. Then, a mullah says circumcision is not required for Muslim girls.
Not only I say this, but many scholars who are knowledgeable about Islam agree that this should not be practiced here in our country.
Next, a female gynecologist warns of health risks. She says circumcised girls sometimes bleed to death or suffer from infections. And the doctor explains that the procedure robs women of their sex drive.
Many newly married women come to me and say, "How can we get sexual pleasure from sexual intercourse?" And I have found out that they have all been circumcised. This will ruin their future.
The film comes to a close. Nurse Hira Najib surveys the 30 women and girls in the audience. 18 of them have been circumcised. Najib implores the women not to subject their daughters and granddaughters to the same fate. She warns them, "If you don't like sex, your husband will take a second wife or a third." The women pull their headscarves across their mouths and giggle. Rana Rafat defended female circumcision before she saw the movie. Now she says she's changed her mind.
"From now on, I will intervene with our relatives and our families. Anybody who doesn't listen to me will have to pay for it."
Men weren't allowed to watch the movie, but village chief Asim Muhammad listened through the window. He says the film turned him around too. He was startled to hear a Muslim cleric advise against circumcising girls.
"The minute I heard the mullah talking about that and explaining it to us, that it is not a good thing to do, I will not let that happen either in my family or relatives or neighbors."
Wadi plans to make another film with more Islamic scholars and doctors giving similar warnings. The activists say they will return to Milasura and other villages. They say the women here may not let go of this tradition without hearing the message again and again. Samer, so that was 2006, a report for the PRI BBC show The World. As far as you know, what has happened since then, these efforts to reach out to rural women and stop or limit the practice?
Well, I accompanied Wadi on some of their trips to these villages, and I did see them in action and them showing the video and having discussions with women and girls. And in the communities that they've been around for a longer period of time, you are seeing changes. You are seeing women and girls who are saying they will not undergo the procedure for themselves or for their children. They realize now that there are serious implications for this procedure and that it's not mandated by religion and there are health consequences. So the good news is that the work that NGOs are doing is having an effect, and you do slowly see the changes in Kurdistan. But in the areas that we went to where Wadi is just starting out, there's more reluctance to talk about the issue, and we are seeing some inroads, but obviously we need the help of the government to really move this forward.
What is the government's obligation here if women and communities are saying this is our practice, we treasure it, it's important to us? What then does the government do to help eradicate it?
Well, FGM is a violation of women's and children's rights, including the rights to life, health, and bodily integrity. What we're asking the government to do is to develop a long-term plan that engulfs the governments along with healthcare workers, NGOs, and community leaders to eradicate the practice. We're asking that they create a strategy to not only include a ban on FGM for children and non-consenting women, but also to create awareness-raising programs to reach out to women and girls in the villages in Kurdistan so that they are aware of the implications.
What did you hear about what the effects were or how women were living with this?
Usually it's quite a traumatic experience. These girls between ages of 3 and 12 usually are brought to a neighbor's house or the midwife who performs this operation, who's not really trained in a professional way. It's sort of handed down from other midwives, the procedures that they use. They go into a neighbor's house or into their own house. The family doesn't tell them what's happening. They just say, oh, we have visitors coming over, or we're going to go to the neighbor's house. So the girls go there, and usually they see maybe about between 5 and 10 other girls in a room. And pretty soon they realize that what's going to happen is a pretty unpleasant experience with the girls who are undergoing the procedure before them, crying and screaming and a lot of commotion. Once it's their turn, for most of the women and girls I've heard, they're actually held down physically and constrained by members of their own family while this procedure is being done. You know, it's extremely painful. It's usually the midwife uses an old razor. There's no sterilization. When talking to these girls and women, it's quite clear that, you know, it was a horrible episode because it's members of their own family who are holding them down, and they feel that they've lost a part of them.
What does it take for, you know, a government to influence this kind of change in a practice?
There's no quick legal fix to something so complex as FGM. Even if they do pass a law tomorrow, it doesn't mean that midwives and women are going to stop undergoing this procedure when it is so deeply entrenched. I think more important aspect to this is the education and awareness programs, where they do outreach to communities and they do try to provide a non-legal solution to this. It's an effective way for the government to start.
What are the reasons that religious officials that do support the practice give for wanting to continue it?
One of the reasons is to control women by removing their sexual desires, I guess. They can effectively make sure that women are under the control of their guardians. Of course, this is not necessarily a view that's expressed always openly, but I think behind the religious explanation is that sort of control. But as we mentioned earlier, this is a minor viewpoint in Islam, with most scholars disagreeing with the practice completely.
And it seems like one of the problems in Iraq is that there's a lot of silence around this issue, that it's only talked about in women's circles, and that actually the Kurdish regional government really wants to be seen by the world as doing the right thing. And it seems like there's a reluctance on the part of the government to actually talk about this. Do you think that that is a big part of the problem?
I think so. I think it's a taboo subject, as you mentioned. At the same time, it's an area that the government doesn't want necessarily to get too much attention on because it's widespread in the sense that many women are affected by this. Even in other parts of Iraq, people don't actually know this practice is going on in northern Iraq and possibly in other parts of the country. And I think our report will be a real eye-opener in that sense because it will teach people for the first time that it actually happens within Iraq.
When women talk about why they want to continue doing it to their daughters or granddaughters, what do they say about why they want to continue the practice?
When we interviewed women, they tell us they're told that it's haram if they don't perform this operation, this procedure.
Haram meaning forbidden in Arabic, yeah.
Yes, and their children will be unclean to prepare food or water or even to get married. I mean, there's different reasons when you ask them. That's the one reason. The other reason is that this is part of our tradition and this has been going on for generations. And it was incredible to hear them discuss this story so openly, especially considering the stigma that's attached. When one girl I spoke to, she was about 20, three of her older sisters had undergone the FGM procedure, but her youngest sister hadn't. And even though their father was pressuring them to conduct the operation, they said that they would do this operation and pretend to do it, but actually they were going to protect their little daughter from having it done.
And Summer, you're also a really good photographer, and people can see those photos online at hrw.org. Can you talk a little bit about the photographs you took?
I was shocked that the women allowed me to take photographs. Obviously, we got consent. But this is one of the incredible things about Kurdistan and how things are changing, in the sense that the women are open, even having this operation. They're willing to not only to talk about it, but to be photographed, because they want to encourage others not to have this happen to them. And I mean, they're incredible women. They're ones, obviously, who have suffered because of this operation. But at the same time, they show such resilience and interest in trying to change things.
Samer Muscati is the Iraq researcher for Human Rights Watch. You can read the report about FGM in northern Iraq called They Took Me and Told Me Nothing on our website. That's hrw.org. You can also look at Samer's slideshow. And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.